This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. Frank X. Walker is here from Kentucky. He is in the library. I am not. Frank, connect us with a poem, please. We're so happy to see you.
So happy to be here and to see you again. Even though you're not sitting here with me, but to bridge the distance, I'm going to open with a love poem, or what we think of as a love poem in Kentucky. This is called Baptism by Dirt, and it's part of the what I consider the silver lining that came with the pandemic and being sheltered in place and being forced to stay at home and not travel and interact with others. We discovered we had a backyard and that we could grow food in it. So this is called Baptism by Dirt for Shauna. All believers know about the power of water, though not enough about the power of dirt. My mama used to walk barefooted in our vegetable garden, get down on her hands and knees and almost pray in the dirt. My wife and our two-year-old built and planted three raised bed gardens. Watching her dip her fingers into the dirt to coddle what will feed us reminds me of mama. And then, what is it that women know about nurturing a seed into a piece of fruit, about believing in the power of dirt and suns and water? I returned from our labor with sore knees and back, fingernails and hands caked with dirt. She floats back into the house, cleaner, somehow less burdened, as if she spent the weekend burying all of her heavy things, as if she whispered to something sacred, and it whispered something back.
That is the voice of Frank X. Walker, and we are so glad. That is truly a love poem. What is the book?
The book is Masked Man Black, Pandemic and Protest Poems.
And that's new.
This is my newest book of poetry. And it was written, I guess, in response to my attempt to survive and process in real time.
And you are the author of 11 collections of poetry. And so this came out of the pandemic, I guess.
It did.
Yeah, and you survived very well, I must say. But the most exciting thing today is your children's book. What a good idea. Show us the cover. It is gorgeous. Who did the cover?
He calls himself Up From Some Dirt, but we call him Ron Davis. And he's the partner of Crystal Wilkinson, the renowned multi-genre writer out of Kentucky and our current poet laureate. But Ron, or as we call him, Dirt, is an artist I've been a fan of for decades. And I think I own some of his original first gallery prints that he exhibited. All of this work he does on the computer. I mean, he's a digital genius.
It is perfect for your book. Now, tell us what's in the book.
Well, what's in the book is disguised as a children's story. What this book is trying to do is to force people to rethink how they define Appalachia. Most people's definition of Appalachia does not include people of color. And this book is a history lesson. It's a summary of all the amazing African-American genius that comes out of Appalachia, you know, which we refer to as Afrolachia, names that people already familiar with but have never associated with Appalachia at all, including the father of Black history himself, Carter G. Woodson, who's from Appalachia. But almost nobody talks about him in the same space as that region. When you consider the musical genius of, say, a Sun Ra, a George Clinton, you know, Nina Simone.
I had no idea. No, people have no idea.
People don't know.
What a good idea, though. What a great and long overdue. When did you know that you had to do this? Has it been incubating in you for a long time, or did you just know that something was missing?
Well, the details, the information itself has been something I've been sharing for decades. As I moved around throughout the region and giving lectures and talks, My first book of poetry that came out in 2000 was called Afrolatia. And
right. It
talked about the people and the land and the place and, you know, some social justice issues and challenges. But I think I was singing the same song for so long that I had forgotten about the children. And this particular set of words I published as a poem in an anthology in West Virginia. And the publisher, after the reading from the anthology was done, she said, wow, that'd make a great children's book.
What an idea. Was that Shirley Sherbert?
It was.
Yeah, right.
Dr. Sherbert said, you know, Frank, I hear a children's book in there. And it had not occurred to me. And on the way back home, I start imagining it as a children's book.
It's going to read a lot of people. And I hope it gets a lot of acclaim. Is it being well received?
It not only is it being well received, we were able to write a successful grant that will allow us to give away 2,000 copies to libraries and elementary schools across the 13 states that are the Appalachian region.
Frank, you have started so many things. You are a beginner. You are an initiator. You created the term Afrolatia.
I did. I'm like a wet nurse or inky.
Well, the wet nurse becomes a poet in our eyes. Give us two poems together so we get a lot of Frank X. Walker visiting from Kentucky. He was the first Black poet laureate in Kentucky and is the author of 11 books of poetry, started a journal called Pluck, which is now online, and he'll tell us about that, has won awards and a very prestigious one from the NAACP Image Award for Poetry. Read to us, Frank.
I'm going to share two more poems from Masked Man, Black Pandemic and Protest Poems. These are two of the protest poems. One of the things that happened during the pandemic, I remember two major food companies finally admitted that their marketing had been at least a little bit racist and decided to clean up those images. So this poem comes from that announcement, newspaper headline. This is called Mrs. Butterworth, Uncle Ben, and Aunt Jemima. Mrs. Butterworth, Uncle Ben, and Aunt Jemima walk into a bar in America. Butterworth says, I'm being repackaged. Ben says, I'm being rebranded. Jemima says, I remember when they branded my mama on her back. The bartender says, I could stand in the middle of Main Street and kill somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters. Butterworth says, then I'll take 8 bullets in my sleep. Ben says, choke me to death with your knee. Jemima says, lock me in the holding cell and say I decided to hang myself. The bartender poured the drinks, said he felt threatened and was simply standing his ground when he thought the thug was reaching for a gun. The headline said, well-loved American foods resisted arrest, failed to comply, and were delicious while Black. Butterworth's daughter said, here's the progress. We might finally get an anti-lynching bill. Ben's son said, I'd rather they abolish qualified immunity. Jemima's kids said, you know, they abolished slavery once. Then they hung my mama on that box. Another one from this section is called DJ Battle. And it reminded me of one of the things I missed the most when the pandemic first hit was summer concerts. So in the summer of 2020, there were no summer concerts because of the fear they'd be super spreader events. But the DJ that I'm referencing here also has another slightly more political reference because it's the initials of a former president. So this is called DJ Battle. And the epigraph says, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. President DJ Trump. The oppressor's private property is always more important to the privileged. Their power is what police protect. Backed by a National Guard fronting a commander in chief, known to incite and encourage violence against POC by the FOP, another good people versus thugs. If you don't understand this behavior or these people, you don't understand emotional or psychological trauma. You don't understand generational grief. And if you really don't understand injustice or American history, know that justice, know that peace, no justice, no peace, no just ICE raids, no guilty cops, just us, dead, dying, and chalk marked over and over again. Like some whack DJ rewinding the bridge or dead refrain, scratching at our eyes with already viral, breathless black body porn, professionally made by the hands, feet, and now knees of thug police again. Instead of turning the tables, we drag out turntables and spin and spin and spin, searching old wax, seeking to sample something human, anything truly good to mix with this black in our lives until we matter.
Ooh, this is a great book. Masked Man, Black, Pandemic, and Protest Poems. How many poems are in the book?
There are about 55, I think.
Uh-huh. Who put it out?
Accents Publishing out of Kentucky.
Okay. You have done a lot. You have been a professor, you've been an activist, you've been a multidisciplinary artist. You really were born to make a difference. Do you feel that way?
I have a 4.5-year-old at home who makes me think that I only exist in the world to serve him and his needs.
Well, now we know one of your real purposes. I believe it with all my heart. What is Africana Studies?
Well, it considers that if you just study African-American history in the United States, it's kind of limited. But when you consider Africana, it allows you to think about the entire diaspora and how it connects to African-descended people in Great Britain, in the United Kingdom, South and Central America, and how all of our conversations, even though they may need to be multilingual, are about the same kind of things. Our survival in the face of colonialism and this oppressive thing that has happened to us since we arrived on the planet, it seems. But Africana Studies delves into the core of that. Mm-hmm. And looks at every possible discipline, psychology, history, psychology, education, the arts, and tries to find a commonality to discuss
it. I think it's the only college that has that. I know my friend Bill Cook started African American Studies way back, like in the 60s at Dartmouth. But this is bigger, it seems to me. It's a big umbrella. Did you invent this curriculum?
They hired me at University of Kentucky to merge the African Studies program and the African American Studies program. And we had a lot of models around the country. You know, down the road at University of Louisville, they have a Pan-African Studies program. There's a great program at Howard University that Greg Carr runs. So we didn't have to invent anything. We just had to find language that worked.
Do many people take it?
Well, I feel like there might be 10 different names that people refer to when they talk about the same thing. But, you know, it's a major at UK. We don't have a PhD program, but you can major in African-American, Africana studies. And that's a recent development. You know,
I bet you're a big part of it. I bet you're a big part of it.
Well, I'm in the middle of it.
You're a professor of English. So what are your courses?
I teach creative writing, poetry, Afro-Latin lit. One of my favorite courses to teach is African-American cinema. And we have undergraduates and graduate students. I also direct the MFA program at UK. And so I get the graduate students in creative writing and poetry, fiction, and nonfiction from across the world, actually. We have quite a few international students every year. But it's still a young program compared to many others around the country, but it's one we're very proud of.
Frank, you graduated from there. So you have seen it from the grassroots up. So you came in as a freshman looking at this, these marble halls or whatever, and thinking, there's so much here for me. Now you're in charge of it. It's amazing.
I wouldn't say in charge, but I have an office.
Does it have
tower. I guess that's very different from when I first arrived many moons ago.
Many moons ago. We are so happy that you're here. Tell us why you're doing research at the Library of Congress.
Well, I'm working on my current obsession. You know, half of my collections are historical poetry. And I've done three on Lewis and Clark in York, and one on Isaac Murphy, and one on Medgar Evers. And this next obsession is United States colored troops that are in Kentucky. And so I've been investigating their lives using archival documents dating back to antebellum and then during the war and then after the war. And, you know, for a lot of weeks, it's been a very dark, dark place. And part of being here is to come to the and check out the National Archives and to look at the monument that has my third great-grandfather's name as part of the monument. I had to come and see that in person and touch his name to keep the energy flowing, to get these poems, you know, out of me and onto a piece of paper.
What a thing you're doing. And I don't think anything exists exactly like this, right?
I don't think so. I know Natasha Trethewey has a set of poems. Actually, her book, Native Guard, won a Pulitzer Prize. And in the heart of the book is a crown of sonnets about the Louisiana soldiers that had become part of the Civil War.
But Kentucky, you're putting Kentucky in the map.
I'm putting Kentucky on the map, and I'm trying to center their families, too, because so much of what happened in Kentucky, people don't know that Kentucky provided the second largest number of Black troops in the country, right behind Louisiana. And people don't think about that when they think about, well, Kentucky was neutral. But 24,000 troops, you know, joined up to allow their families to have that immediate freedom. That was the major factor. And they also, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation was void in Kentucky because it only impacted states in rebellion against the Union. So when it happened, it meant nothing in Kentucky. So we had to fight for our freedom in Kentucky. So that whole story is a little different from the national story. So that's the one I'm trying to tell through these poems.
Frank X. Walker, you are literally changing the state. Really, the geography is going inward. It is an interior geography now. Read us another poem, please.
How about
tell us again the name of the book?
This book is Masked Man, Black Pandemic and Protest Poems. And I mentioned in the opening poem that these were hard poems and also love poems, the love poems of the silver lining. So I'll share one more love poem. It's called Corona Love, also for Shana. Our stay-at-home order has come with a silver lining. Suddenly, we can take our time with things that matter, with everything we may have taken for granted. Saturday, for example, my wife and I made love all day. Now, I don't mean we locked ourselves in our bedroom for hours and hours, stayed naked in, you know. I mean, all the kids slept in, so we didn't rush either. We took our time. We kissed. I mean, really kissed. No pecks, no smooches. We kissed deep and long, and we meant it. I have to admit that the way the machine ran around here pre-corona, we were lucky to get a peck in before getting four of us off in four different directions to four different places, all before 8 a.m. A measly peck on those mornings had to last all day. So we didn't just kiss. We lingered in each other's arms, a place we found ourselves still clinging to after digesting the previous day's body count and news, trying to verbalize our worst fears as the headlines got closer and closer to our front door. We savor everything now. We know that if one of us gets sick, there will be nothing but difficult choices to follow. If any of our kids were stricken, we were told we couldn't be at the bedside, what then? We hugged and flirted through breakfast. We held hands, sent private messages, planned a naked nap to coincide with our 2-year-old sleep time. The few we know who are dying will soon become many. We know there will be more funerals we can't attend. The impending loss is so heavy, it's hard to keep convincing the teenagers that the homework, which used to feel like life and death, is just not that serious right now. So we smile and wink and touch and hug and kiss and squeeze and cry and laugh every chance we get. We don't know what's coming and who's going or if we will be among them. So take our advice. If you wake up already where you want to be and don't have to rush anywhere, recognize it as a gift. Take your time. Linger. Wallow. Forget finishing. Don't stop. Leave a tender bookmark and come back as soon as you can.
Oh, Frank, everyone's going to want that poem. Everyone's going to want that poem just to make their life more delicious. My favorite line is, and we meant it. Mm. And we meant it. And we meant it. 4 one-syllable words, Frank. Little powerful words. Just one syllable. But what it means. And they say poetry doesn't do anything. And they say poetry doesn't make anything happen. Mm-mm, so wrong. You've done a lot besides being a poet. I know that you actually began the journal Pluck. And so is that still going on?
Yeah, the journal was a print version in its earliest versions. And we are now transitioning to make it a solely online. And that's been a difficult transition because of COVID. Everything is a lot slower. So we missed a few steps, but hopefully it'll be up and running by the end of the year and people can log on. And we're trying to transition all the previous print issues into online versions as well. So you'll be able to read back to the very beginning.
Wow.
And up to the present and continue going forward.
What is the mission of it?
Well, it's a journal of Appalachian arts and culture. And what we try to do at the very beginning was show that not only was there great literature in those 13 states that was about culture and history that affected people of color, but there were other art forms as well. Amazing musicians, dance groups, educational opportunities, and these history and myths and stories that were worth capturing in the same space with scholarship and brand new poetry being written and short stories and great photographs. So it's a beautiful, the books are beautiful. I can't wait to get it all assembled together online so people from everywhere can just...
A canon for history for sure. You know, Africana and Afrolatia didn't really exist as a movement before you started it. I mean, I know that there was random poetry and literature that was unrecognized in Kentucky. And I know that it needed to be galvanized. And I'm believing that your spirit and your presence pulled those strings together and made a core. Am I describing it right? And I believe the Afrolatia poets is that.
Well, you know, I think given our longevity and where we are in the world now, and I think there's something to that. I think even though when we started, we were just a bunch of young writers trying to read and share with each other in a space that we didn't feel welcome in. And these poems and short stories kept us alive and kept us whole. And over the years, it just grew into this larger thing that impacted so many other people that it, is not something we could keep under a basket anymore. And it's
you can't hold back light. You can't hold back light. Try all you might. Yes, Frank. What about the students you're teaching? Are they good kids?
Well, not only are they good kids, I feel fortunate that, we keep getting some of the best young writers from around the country and abroad. We currently have a young poet from Turkey. We have one from Nigeria. We have, I think We have an applicant for this year's pool all the way from the Netherlands. You know, so somehow the word is getting out about our program, our commitment to diversity, and the quality of the writing that happens in the program and then with the students once they get out of the program. You know, we've had some amazing young people come through and then leap into other classrooms or to publishing opportunities or onto jobs at presses around the country. You know, and many of them are in university settings at this moment, and largely due to the education and support and mentoring we gave them when they're at the University of Kentucky. So we're trying to make a difference in the world.
Just but not only trying, you're succeeding. Frank X. Walker, you're writing a journal, you're putting it online, you're making a canon of historical input. You are teaching, a pool professor, you're running programs, you're publishing books, you're a dad, you're a husband, you are in charge of poetry itself. How many Frank X. Walkers are there?
Well, there's at least one more because I'm also a visual artist.
And I was wondering when it said multidisciplinary artist, that's a word I don't know enough about.
Well, it just means that, you know, we're real Geminis. This is one of my paintings on the cover of this book, in fact. That's acrylic. That's an older painting I've done in acrylic. I have a lot of, I do wood carvings, you know, photography, mixed media. A series that imagines Harriet Tubman in the 22nd century, that she's being cloned and the army of Harriet Tubmans are going from planet to planet in the solar system, freeing enslaved entities wherever they find them.
To get to Hollywood.
Visually. I'm about 10 panels in. So
it's a storyboard.
It's bigger than storyboards because I'm making them large enough to be finished pieces of art. There are currently 4 of them on exhibit somewhere in Kentucky.
Frank X. Walker, when you were little, did your mother say, "Won't you sit still?"
No, she would just put a book in my head and it would do the same thing that she wanted. I would just freeze in that moment. And then my mind would travel the way my body was traveling all over the universe. But that was her secret weapon. Just put a book in his hand. And that's the only thing that kept him still. And I would almost disappear because I'd go in a quiet place, sometimes under the bed, with a flashlight just to read. There was so much power in
it. It makes me think that writers were born to write. I just don't know how to explain that you came in trying to figure out those hieroglyphics on the page and entering that forest of words and feeling safe there. You know, who does that? It's the writer. I believe the writer is wired at birth. I do. And you have more wires than you need, Frank. More wires than anybody I know. So give us a closing poem.
Closing poem. Let me see. There's something that happened that I came across in the news that I believe it's, make sure I can find it. Here it is. I was watching the news during the pandemic and there was a protest happening in Philadelphia. And there was a couple inside City Hall getting married. And they came out and saw the protest happening. And instead of going off and to a wedding reception, they joined the protests, still dressed in their wedding clothes. And that image was so powerful to me that I wrote this poem for Carrie Ann and Michael. And it's called, "Y'all Say I Do, We Say Black Lives Matter." What a powerful way to say, till death do us part. To stand in defiance of murder after murder after murder and still choose life together. To seal your vows and then march for all our promises into Philly streets swollen with protesters where they replace rice with tear gas and pepper spray. It still felt more like a large reception for freedom than a riot. Resplendent in wedding gown and tuxedo, fists raised high to demonstrate that Black love is the liberation married to the joy that fills your faces, thinking only of the honeymoon where all couples know justice because Black couples know peace.
That's Frank X. Walker, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Snippet Fund, Natalie Canivore, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin is our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.